Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello and welcome back to the show. Hey Dad, how you doing?
Good, Tay. How you doing?
Doing all right. You got some, got a big old snowstorm. Giant storm moving in, right?
Yeah, it's sweeping up over us right now. It's rain right now, but it's supposed to turn to ice after a while and then to snow. And I'm hoping the ice doesn't come down for very long, because last year, you might remember, we were shut down for 2 weeks here with an ice storm.
I remember that.
Power outages.
Hotels, yeah.
Yeah, power outages, trees down. It was bad. It was bad for a while.
I think it's going to miss us up here in New York, luckily. So.
Well, you've had quite a bit, so maybe you've had your share.
There's still so much disgusting snow on the ground right now. Snow itself isn't disgusting. I like snow, but New York snow is nice for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it's just sludge.
And that damn gopher didn't help us out. He saw a shadow or whatever. Anyway, they said more winter.
One of them did, and then like one of the other, I didn't know that there were multiple it's not a gopher.
Groundhog.
It's a groundhog. It's Groundhog Day. Wait a second.
It's a beaver. It's a beaver.
Yeah, whatever. One of them died, all right? There was one of them a meteorologist groundhog that passed away, and I don't know what that is predicting for the coming year.
I don't know. I know there's Punxsutawney Phil, and I know there's French Lick Freddy, so.
You definitely made up one of those names.
No, both of those are real.
Well, I don't know. One of them, I think, is no longer with us.
Oh.
Maybe there's another. I don't know. Maybe there's a third.
Oh, there's a lot of them. They pull them out because they're trying to cash in on it.
How many are there? Is it a consensus? Is it like 9 out of 10 dentists recommend? Is it like 9 out of 10 groundhogs predict?
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, it's kind of like some of these drinks that we explore, and there's competing people about who did it first and all that kind of stuff. It's the same thing with the groundhogs. That there's some that Punxsutawney Phil was the reigning champ forever, as far back as I can remember. Then all of a sudden, all these other ones started to creep in, but people would say, we were here first. They just had more publicity. They had a better PR guy.
I just want to know, like, the one with the best record, like... Because they predict that the winter is going to stick around, but then did it? Like, I want to know, is how many of these groundhogs are just, like, accurately predicting the weather, and how many of them are just doing it for the little top hat?
Well, I mean, here's what they say. If he sees a shadow, then you got 6 more weeks of winter. If he doesn't see it, then you got a month and a half until spring.
That's the same.
So he's never wrong.
That's not what they say. They don't say that.
I don't wonder what is it if he doesn't. It's not like summer's tomorrow.
Well, I mean, look, it's on its way, all right? I don't know groundhog meteorology.
I don't know exactly what it is. I know that they said that. But here's another interesting stat. He predicts more winter 85% of the time. So... If just predict more winter, you're going to be right because you're doing it 85% of the time anyway.
Well, but the thing is, he sees his shadow and he runs back inside, right?
Yeah, if they let him.
Well, like how much do you think having like a giant film crew surround your little hole and you come out and you're like, oh shit,
yeah.
You run back inside like, oh, I guess there's more winter. Like, no, you just scared that little dude. You got a camera in his face. His shadow is like 3 times the size because of all the lights. He's terrified.
I think it's decided before he ever comes out of the damn hole. They already know what they're going to say. That gopher's got very little to do with it.
What is it? It's a lie?
It's a
setup?
Yeah, it's just so that they can give out free hot chocolate or something. I don't know.
The big meteorology is behind it all?
Yeah, that's right. So they can give you the real scoop.
Oh, no. No. All right. Well,
one of these gophers goes up and knocks off the other one because he wants more publicity. We're number two, but we try harder.
I don't want this game of groundhogs scenario that you're presenting.
Game of mounds.
So Groundhog Day, clearly not that enjoyable of a holiday, just a generally confusing one. But we do have a holiday that I do want to celebrate that is upon us.
Oh, yeah. It's a much funner one than the Groundhog Day.
Yeah, no groundhogs are harmed or even involved in this holiday. I'm talking about National Peace Go Sour Day.
Woohoo!
Yeah! It's coming up this Saturday. It is the first Saturday in February since it started in 2003. This is Peru's national holiday, but it's not ours. But we're going to celebrate it anyway because it's a good reason to drink Pisco Sours and talk about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So first Saturday in every February, you just get to.
That's kind of bad, though. It's a national holiday, and they do it on a Saturday? You don't even get off from work for that.
Well, I mean, I don't think they would get off from work if it wasn't on a Saturday either.
If it's a national holiday, they should.
I mean, I think it's like, okay, have you actually seen like the food holidays that we have where you've got like Cupcake Day and like Pizza Day? Nobody gets off for work for those, Dad.
Well, right, but they're not national days. See, I think of national days as like Christmas and New Year's and Thanksgiving, things like that. Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, and Pisco Day.
But they set it as the first Saturday in February. So clearly they meant for it to be on a Saturday. Like they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
They didn't want to have to answer that question.
They figure if you're going to be drunk, you need to be drunk on a weekend.
Ah, that's fine. You know, whatever. But yeah, so I thought in honor of the upcoming holiday, the far superior holiday to Groundhog Day. We could, you know, we talked a few weeks ago about Pisco, but we didn't really go into detail in the Pisco Sour. There's an episode's worth of history just around the Pisco Sour. And then we've got a little time at the end. We're going to talk a bit about Peruvian drinking culture. A little vacation in our minds to get away from all this gross snowy weather that's upon us.
Peruvian. That sounds Groovian.
Yes. Now, just as a quick recap, in case you didn't listen, you don't listen to our podcast every single week, which I don't
shame
know.
On you.
It's your choice. But if you did not listen to our Pisco episode, that's fine. It was like, what, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? Anyway.
Two.
All right. Quick refresher on what Pisco is. It's a base spirit made from fermented grapes. It is made and consumed in Chile and Peru. But it originally was made in Peru in the 16th century when Spanish settlers imported grapevines for winemaking and began making aguardiente as a sort of rough, unaged brandy from the excess grapes. That liquor became popular, and it got the name Pisco around 1764 after the Peruvian port where much of it was shipped from and consumed. So from there, naturally, Pisco found its way into cocktails as the 18th century was a boon for mixology.
And the Pisco Sour soon followed, at least in Peru.
Well, yes, it took a while to get outside of it. But, from there, the Pisco Sour, like many cocktails we discuss, and apparently like groundhogs, has a confusing origin story.
And a competing one.
But before we get into that, it's always good to just say, what is a Pisco Sour nowadays? If you order one at a well-stocked bar now, what are you going to get? What you're going to get is a mix of Pisco, lime juice, simple syrup, egg white, and it's usually served up with a few dots of Angostura bitters sitting on the egg foam. So proportions vary from bartender to bartender, obviously. But the standard would be like a classic sour build. 2 ounces spirit, 3/4 sugar, 3/4 citrus, 1 egg white, shaken, of course. And then the Angostura will be used as a garnish on top. So you'll drop it. Maybe you'll get a little swirly pattern on top of the foam. And that's a very specific reason we do that on egg white drinks is because the strong, pleasant nose of the Angostura will cancel out the strong, not so pleasant nose of egg whites, which can smell a little bit sulfuric. Yeah.
Yeah. I get that when I make my tuna and egg salad sandwiches. A lot of people don't like the smell of them.
No, that's a combination of smells. Have you considered putting some Angostura bitters on your egg white and tuna sandwiches?
No, but I do put onions and celery.
That's not going to make it better. That celery is standing alone is the only pleasant smell in that whole mix. But even that's questionable.
It's 99% water.
All right. But that's the drink as it is today. Now, history-wise, the Pisco Sour is commonly contributed, and I think most popularly contributed, to one bartender who was working in Lima, Peru, by the name of Victor Morris. Though he was not actually Peruvian by birth. Morris was born in 1873 in Salt Lake City, Utah. He was from a Mormon family who actually played a prominent role in the founding of the city. And in Morris's young adulthood, he actually worked in a flower shop. He was like a well-known flowerman. I don't know what a person who...
A florist.
There you go. Florist. Wow. That is a word.
I'm glad I was able to figure that out for you.
You know what? The things I know about, I know a lot about. The things I don't, super don't.
He was a flowerman.
I would ask you to edit that out, but I'm gonna own it. I'm gonna own that that's where I went.
That's like he was a first baseman.
A flowerman. So well-known flowerman, Victor Morris. He left the flower business to take a cashier job with the Cerro de Pasco Railway Company, that was based in Peru. So they were building the highest altitude railway in the world at the time. He's offered this job. He took it, moved to Peru. When the railway was completed in 1904, Morris was put in charge of the celebration. So the party quickly went through all the whiskey he had allocated for it, and he switched instead to the beloved local spirit, Pisco, to mix cocktails for the celebrities and dignitaries in attendance. Now, whiskey sours were a popular style of drink by that time, so he might have even been making some for them. This might have been sort of the first moment of the idea that he came across for a Pisco Sour, but in any case, he was not yet a bartender. But he was introduced to how to mix with Pisco at this party, and he kind of kept that with him. So after this job finished, he moved to Lima, Peru, and he opened a saloon called Morris's Bar in 1916. This catered very much to the upper class, foreign clientele, familiar with cocktail bars. And so, of course, he was expected to be able to make a good drink, and he experimented with a lot of popular drink styles at the time, at some point incorporating Pisco in place of whiskey and a whiskey sour. Thus, the whiskey sour was born. And the earliest known record associating Morris's Bar with the Pisco Sour comes in 1920, and that was he was big into advertising. He was one of those earliest people to, like, really take advantage of it. And he would pay for advertisements in, like, local magazines, showing, like, the cocktails he made in his bar. So here we get a tie of a drink called a Pisco Sour and his bar and his recipe. But it's worth noting that his recipe, the original form of the Pisco Sour, was just lime, sugar, and Pisco. So not quite what we call a Pisco Sour today. That egg white and bitter combo wouldn't be added until a few years later, and that was actually done by one of his original apprentices, Mario Bruguet, whose version took over as the house special in 1924. So Mario's the one that put the egg white and the bitters in, and that became the go-to recipe.
That brought out the flavor that was waiting to jump out at you.
Sometimes you just need an egg white.
That's right.
Yeah.
With bitters floating on top, so you don't smell it.
Now, over time, unfortunately, Morris fell on some hard times. His bar helped create this draw to Lima as sort of a cool, like, drinking spot. But inevitably, other upscale establishments around him, other hotel bars, would develop cocktail menus, would also serve Pisco Sours, which sort of compete with what he had going on. And that, paired with his failing health, eventually led him to have to close his bar and declare bankruptcy. But many of the people who worked for him, including Mario, would go on from there to open their own bars or work at other prominent bars and spread the recipe of the Pisco Sour far and wide. Bruguet would work at the Grand Hotel Mari nearby. This a bar that is sometimes attributed as the birthplace of the Pisco Sour. It's not. He had worked at this other bar previously where he learned the recipe, but that was really where he set up and kind of made a name for himself and sold a lot of Pisco Sours. So,
yeah, well, obviously Morris sampled a lot of his own handiwork because he died of cirrhosis.
Yes. Tragic. Thanks for the this bummer brought to you by Tom Smurl.
Hey, well, you said he was dead. All I did was say why.
Well, all right. No.
You already killed the some bitch off. All I did was say why he died.
I said he closed his bar and declared bankruptcy. Yeah,
well, then you said he died of poor health.
I said he had failing health.
I thought you said he died of failing health. Oh.
Did not.
Well, his health was really bad. It was so bad he was dead.
The death of a flowerman.
Is it too soon?
Yes, actually. he gave us the Pisco Sour. Have some respect. Now, by the 30s, the drink had reached California. It really introduced a generation of celebrities and bartenders to Pisco and, you know, its mixing abilities. And, of course, its signature drink, the Pisco Sour, along with that. And this is a cool bit of history. You know, we've talked about tiki cocktails, about like Trader Vic's bar, which was a big like kind of ground zero for the tiki bar craze. They even made Pisco Sours in like in the 1930s. There's a story of them making them in 1934. So it made its way all the way from Peru up to California and into prominent bars that were working in completely different spirits, completely different styles. And celebrities and socialites really latched onto this. In fact, you know, lots of them would travel to Peru for the next decade or so, would consume many Pisco Sours. There was a big oil boom that was happening in Lima. It invited a lot of wealth to the area. And there are all these stories that come up in like the 40s and 50s of, you know, people like Ava Gardner being carried away by John Wayne from a bar after drinking too many Pisco Sours. None other than the Where's Waldo of the drinking world, Ernest Hemingway, pops up. Yeah. Drinking, along with Orson Welles, drinking what they just called the Peruvian drink in various, you know, very nice Peruvian hotel lobby bars. So it has a moment of sort of fame in the 40s and 50s.
Well, It also, there's quite a few others that got involved. Anthony Bourdain later on was involved in sampling the Pisco,
Sour. Much later.
Yeah. But I mean, it continues to be, it's still kind of a special drink, I guess.
That Anthony Bourdain story, I think, is very, it's very quintessential, I think, how Anthony Bourdain conducted himself, because he had been in Peru first, and he had had many Pisco Sours, and which I'll get into. There's a lot about where the Pisco Sour should be made and comes from between Peru and Chile, but he'd had them in Peru, and he had quite a few, and then when he was in Chile, he was offered one, and he drank it respectfully, and then he switched to beer. And, you know, I think, like, if you've, like, followed his writings or his work, like, he's very respectful, but that was very much a choice. Like, I will drink Pisco Sours in Peru. I'll drink beer.
Beer in Chile. Today.
We're not Pisco Sours, so.
And they're highly competitive with each other, too, over Pisco and over the Pisco Sour.
Yes.
You know, that's a heated debate. And a lot of people claim that debate is kind of done. It's not real. It's kind of like wrestling, you know.
Right.
It's just done to create this, you know, dialogue so that people will hear about it and be interested.
Oh, and I think that's got to be true, because even when we talked about him with Pisco, there's a lot of agreements between the two nations about how they label it, so that, I mean, for one, they import each other's stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of Peruvian Pisco sold in Chile, and there's Chilean Pisco sold in Peru. But also, like, to not try to lobby for restraints on where it can be made so that both places can make it. This is an agreement they've made. So I do think that there's this, and I mean, there's also a recognition that they both make different styles. They don't encroach on each other's territory in that realm. Which even in the Pisco Sour, which Chile also claims, they sort of have their own origin story. It's It's tied to if it was true, it would actually predate the Pisco Sour in Peru, but it was more of a mistranslation situation. There was like an old article that talked about a barman creating a sour, but if anything, it might undermine the origin story of the whiskey sour, because the translation was wrong. That a Chilean bartender might have made the first whiskey sour, might have, or at least it was around the time that whiskey sours were originated in, like, you know, New York bars and American bars. So it could have been in the same time period. But in any case, they weren't talking about Pisco at the time. So that claim sort of falls off. And I think more importantly, also, there's before Morris invented his Pisco Sour, there's actually surfaced a recipe book this was in 1903, that was from, published in Lima, called the Nuevo Manual de Cocina a la Criolla, where they have a drink listed in there that's simply called cocktail, but it's got Pisco, it's got egg whites, it's got sugar, and it's got lime. So at this time Morris was still working on the railroad, like, you know, Morris was nowhere near opening his bar, but this was a popular cocktail book at the time. Now I don't think this means that Morris saw this and like stole the recipe and then made the Pisco Sour. I think it's far more this idea that we've talked about before on the show, where the idea of mixing a base spirit with sugar and citrus had been around.
Yeah.
Someone was going to do it. Probably lots of people did it. Morris was the first one to be behind a prominent bar where lots of people could encounter it and write it down and give it proportions and give it a name and spread it. And I don't think that should be taken away from him. But you do get that confusing where Chile has a claim. There's an old recipe book that kind of has a claim. But I think ultimately, sometimes the victor just is the one that gets it out there. You know?
Yeah, that does the best advertising. Yeah. And I think Morris did that.
Yeah.
You know, but the biggest indicator, I think, that it's not that vicious of a competition is that Chile is the number one importer of Pisco in the world from Peru.
Oh, really? In the world. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, they're the biggest importer in the world of Peruvian Pisco. So, you know, you may have national pride, but the you're going to drink what you like.
Well, and I mean, I think it's kind of a cheeky little back and forth, like you said. It's, you know, all it does is make me want to drink Pisco in both places. Mm-hmm. The Pisco Sour, if you order one in Peru, will be the one that I described at the beginning. You know, that nowadays, that combination of egg white, Ango, lime, sugar, Pisco. The Chilean Pisco Sour nowadays is different. It actually doesn't have the egg white or the bitters in it. So you're just dealing with lime, sugar, Pisco. I'm not going to state an opinion on where I think it comes from, because it's all, we have very little, you know, a newspaper article here, a magazine there, somebody's personal statement there. But I do think, whatever you believe, the recipe that has become worldwide, like, renowned is the Peruvian Pisco Sour.
Mm-hmm. You know, I noticed that a lot of the recipes, like, just if you look up recipes for a Pisco Sour, there's just as many, at least in America, that are using lemon juice as using lime juice.
Really?
So, yeah, when I'd look them up, half of them were sewing lemon juice as the juice going in there. And there was even one that they had a different name for it, and it had orange juice. Well, orange juice is sweet. Yeah, that's sweet. That's not even sour.
No, I mean, I don't, like, it's always lime. There are some cocktails where you can get into that lemon or lime, but if somebody picked up lemon to make my Pisco Sour, I would...
You'd be upset, huh?
Well, I'd be very confused.
Would you be Pisco'd off?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. But yeah, so that's, you know, the Pisco Sour should... If you order it in a bar. And I mean, you gotta kind of be at a cocktail bar to order that. You know, if it's not on a menu, there are some ingredients. Most ingredients a bar is going to have. Pisco really should be at a well-stocked bar, but maybe not. Egg whites should be at a well-stocked bar, but maybe not. Everything else is pretty standard. But I don't know. If you get the chance to order one, if you've got a good cocktail bar, you can always ask. I think it's worth trying. I mean, I think it's a delicious cocktail.
Well, one of the things that might cause some confusion, I read that it was either Peru or Chile, one or the other, that they call limes green lemons. So
oh, yeah.
That might be part of the problem.
Well, and that's once again, it's sort of a translation thing. That's a confusion for a lot of recipes where yeah. it's not lemon, it's lime, but it's just that's...
They call them green lemons, yeah.
Yeah. but no, it's a classic. It's a classic for a reason. And it's got a cool history behind it. However, you can argue the points of like where the idea originated, but I still would say that like Morris's Bar is definitely where it propagated and spread throughout the world.
Well, I'm in favor of trying it because I like the whiskey sour so much. So why wouldn't I like this?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I thought to sort of if you do, obviously not this year because I don't know, there's still lots of quarantine restrictions and stuff like that. But if you ever get to be in Peru for Pisco Sour Day, we could talk a little bit about what drinking's like in Peru. There's not. I've never been there, so I don't have personal experience. but there's some interesting stuff. First off, drinking age is 18.
So it's the home of the Incas.
Well, yeah.
Not that they're around anymore, but
What does that have to do with the drinking culture?
Well, I don't know. The Incas were, around a long time ago, so, they yeah. probably had a drinking culture, and they had lots of fancy stuff, too. Jewels and gold and all kinds of stuff like that.
Okay, all right. So, if you were drinking in Peru today, I don't know how that would...
They might have pictures. They might have pictures on the wall or something,
Okay. drinking age is 18. When it comes to beer, it's less staunchly enforced. Like a younger person might be able to buy a few bottles of beer at a supermarket. No problem. It's more about carding people for clubs and liquor stores. I did think this was interesting. There is one drinking law called the Ley Seca, or the Dry Law, which is used during national elections. Mm-hmm. This law bans the sale of alcohol for a few days before and during elections, presumably in an attempt to promote clear-headedness and general order throughout the country.
Huh. Well, I'd say that's a good law. Remember what we read about Edgar Allan Poe?
Oh, yeah, that he was a lot of people. What was that called?
Yeah, a lot of people. Yeah, there was a name for that, where they drunk you up and march you in to vote two or three times. They dress you in different clothes. You're practically Weekend at Bernie body. They dress you in different clothes and have you vote several times for the candidate of their choice.
Not a bad idea to.
yeah,
I mean, I think here in America, people would riot if you tried to. I don't know. There'd be some conspiracy as to why you don't want people to drink around election days, but
you can't drink and you have to wear a mask. There you go. That would set everybody off.
That's not like the second part is all you needed to say. Like, just wear a mask. We can't get past that here.
No.
I'm gonna go back to Peru now mentally because I don't want to think about that. If you do get the chance to visit Peru, you should try the Pisco Sour. But if for every reason that's not your bag, there are lots of other cool drinking staples to try. On the cocktail front, one that is possibly it's similar as like a go-to drink in Peru, and maybe even more preferred by locals, and that's the Chilcano, which is sort of a Peruvian buck. So a buck, B-U-C-K, is usually base spirit, ginger ale, lime, ice. Like that's what a build for a buck is. Similar like a mule. So a mule is ginger beer, a buck is ginger ale. So similarly, this drink is Pisco, ginger ale, lime, and Pisco. Said that twice. But yes. And there's actually a festival for these as well. Like in mid-January, they have a Chilcano celebration because there are lots of variations that will throw in other fruits, fruit juices, other syrups and stuff to flavor it differently. So it's a very popular, a little bit lighter, less sweet Pisco drink. Peru, you'll like this, Dad. It's also very much a beer-drinking country.
All right. I knew I liked Peruvians.
it's cheap, it's popular, and it's tied to a lot of communal and social engagements.
Mm-hmm.
The largest brands in Peru are all brewed by the same company. It's called Bacchus, and it's actually an Anheuser-Busch company. So
what?
Yeah, but it's not.
So they're drinking Budweiser and Busch and.
No, they all have different. They're all specific brands that are associated with Peru, but they're not drinking Budweiser. They're not drinking Busch, but it is owned by the Anheuser-Busch brewery. But they are lighter Pilsner styles for the most part. But there are starting around the 2010s. There were a lot of microbreweries that started popping up and experimenting with local flavors, making quinoa beer, making more nuanced versions of corn beer that's popular from tradition. So there's a lot of beer drinking in whatever direction you prefer,
Well, I'm going to create and go to Budweiser with my idea for a Pisco Seltzer. Since they're so big into those seltzers, I guess you'd make a Pisco Seltzer for down there.
Yeah, but they'd have to actually use good Pisco in it.
And you don't think Budweiser would do that, huh?
I think that whatever grain spirit is used in these seltzers is it can be anything. They're not going to spend money on good Pisco. They're using whatever they can ferment. As much as when we talk about the history of alcohol, there's a lot of these periods of time where people are fermenting whatever the hell they can, and we're like, wow, that was so gross. I will tell you, I had two White Claws the other night, two. And I can drink. And I didn't get drunk. I didn't feel sick or anything that night. But I woke up the next day with the worst headache. And it's just whatever. I don't know what they ferment to make that alcohol, to make that grain-neutral spirit. But I think when something's labeled grain-neutral spirit, you should at least raise an eyebrow.
Yeah. I think Riley runs into some problems with those White Claws, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they ferment with, but it gives me a headache. It's not even about getting drunk. It's just having more than one, and I can have cocktails. I can drink gin or vodka or Pisco, but man, whatever they use to provide alcohol and White Claw. So I don't know. I think you'd have a hard time convincing them to invest in good Pisco.
All right. Well, we won't make the Pisco seltzers in.
Although I don't know, maybe I don't want to be a naysayer. That might be a million-dollar idea. I did think this was cool, though. This isn't exclusively how you have to drink beer, but there is sort of a cool communal beer drinking tradition that you find in Peru, which is a beer circle.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of beer is sold in large bottles in Peru, and it's meant to be consumed with others. So you'll. It's kind of the way it works is you'll sit in a circle with other people, your friends, and you got one glass and one big old bottle of beer. So the first person will pour their beer, they'll hand the bottle to the next person, and that person will wait while that first person drinks their beer. And then it's important that you flick out the foam, your little phobia remains, and then you'll pass the glass to the next person. That person who has the bottle of beer will fill up their glass, pass the bottle down, drink their beer, flip out the glass, and then pass it to the next person. And you'll do that around in the circle till the beer's gone, and then somebody else buys the next beer. So everybody's drinking together from the same bottle, from the same cup.
Well, that doesn't sound very, good in COVID days.
In COVID days, I guess if you've all been tested and vaccinated. But, this is not a recent tradition. This is a long-standing tradition among friends, not strangers.
So basically, they drink communal 40s, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's fair. Yeah. I've done that before in a less organized, traditional way, but yeah.
Yeah, I would splurge for everybody having their own paper cup, but, whatever.
It's about the bonding experience. We've talked about this with other spirits. No.
Share germs with your neighbors. The alcohol will kill the germs.
Many things seemed okay before COVID, all right?
Yeah, that's true.
One day they'll seem okay again. I don't know. and of course, outside of, more mainstream beer, there are some traditions. We've touched a bit on, chicha before, but also a prominent fermented beverage in Peru, chicha de jora, which is the made from corn, dates all the way back to the Incan Empire. It's, a sort of a corn beer and sometimes it's blended with strawberries to make chicha de frutilla. But in any case, there's a lot of beer drinking in Peru. And of course, if you're not drinking alcohol, which I guess that you mentioned the Incan Empire, there's a different Incan Empire, I guess, in control now, which is Inca Cola.
Oh, yeah? Like Coca-Cola?
Well, yeah, it is to Peruvians what Coca-Cola, I think, is to Americans. It's a very ubiquitous cola beverage. It's bright yellow, and it's sort of a bubblegum flavored soda.
Ew, gross.
It's beloved there.
Really?
I think it has been acquired. I don't want to, don't quote me on this, but I think it's been acquired by the Coca-Cola company, actually. It's been acquired by a bigger company now, and that's why, because you can find it in America. You can find it on Amazon if you want to drink it.
Huh.
But it's produced by a bigger company now. It actually has its own story. Like, it dates back to, like, missionaries a century ago or something. But, yeah, so, you know, even if you're not you don't want to consume alcohol, there's still sort of a local popular beverage you can consume.
Well, see, the Incans were the original Anheuser-Busch. They're making their corn beer.
How do you make that connection?
See, I knew there was a reason I brought them up.
I didn't know where you were going with that. If you were drinking today in Peru, this is what you'd do. The Incans had some gold.
Well, that's what made them cool. They had all that gold and jewelry and everything. And then they disappeared. Nobody knows what happened to the Incans.
I don't want to stand behind anything you just said, because that feels like a very reductive, not right version of history. Had a lot of gold, were really cool, disappeared. No one knows what happens to them.
Other than their corn beer.
I think
they left that behind
on there. I think there were maybe some other things there. I can't say. I mean, but who am I to say? I thought a florist was a flowerman, so don't listen to me. Fuck. All right. Dad, do you have any other thoughts on the Pisco Sour or Peru or the Incans?
No. I'm looking forward to trying one, though. I want to see if I can find a bottle of Pisco, whether I've got to order it or if they have it somewhere around so I can get that and try it. I want to get Peruvian Pisco, too.
Yeah, I think you should be able to find it. I don't know. I'm always kind of spoiled by, or at least just like my view is skewed from being in New York for so long. I'm like, yeah, Pisco's in every store. Like, I can find it in like my shitty liquor store has Pisco. Good ones have it, definitely. But I don't know.
What I need to do is just ask them, because a lot of times there's this one store I go to, and when I'm looking for something, I'll go up and I ask, no, we don't have that. And I'll go in a couple weeks later, and they've got it. And I guess the guy's like going, hey, we got a run started. People are asking for this. Let's get one. And I'm the only son of a bitch in town that's asked for it.
They're just like, man, we're sitting on cases of Geneva and maraschino liqueur. What is going on? Why did we do this?
Yeah, I'll get them going on Old Tom Gin and Pisco.
I think about that. Although I don't know if they, maybe they can order single bottles for you. I know you can do that. I can do that from distributors, so maybe.
Yeah, it's possible. Just depends on how long you got to wait.
Yeah, that's true. Well, all right. So there you go. So I hope if you're listening and you want a reason to celebrate on Saturday, we're still in pandemic times. I think everybody deserves to just find, if you can find a reason to celebrate, do it. This Saturday, Peruvian Pisco Sour Day. If you want to know what one tastes like, make one for yourself.
All right. It's a simple mix, too.
Yeah. Easy drink. The videos, it is now February, so moving forward, our videos are going to be Patreon exclusives, but it's just $1 a month to join our Patreon. Check out those videos. There are also a lot of other cool rewards. There are stickers. There are coasters. There are free bespoke cocktail videos as well. There's all sorts of cool stuff. If you want to find us on social media, you can find us at NeatBoozeCast on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to email us, you can email us at neattheboozecast@gmail.com. And if you want to talk about your favorite Pisco recipe,
we have Neat the BoozeCast group on Facebook.
If you want to inform Dad a little bit more about the Incan Empire, you can do that there too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I'm willing to learn. Say they had gold and beer. That's two good places to start.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Inca Kola is gold, so there's something there.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Well, that was all the ads, right? I got them?
I think you hit them all.
Hit them all. All right. Okay. I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
I'm going to have to brush up on my Incan Empire knowledge.
I apparently need to remember what basic English words are.
Well, you know, florist isn't a word you use every day.